Two steep but I.
He wants to get it. I quit the one the
these are there.
Add his ears.
All the masters were on top, though.
Your mic on?
All right, we're about 30 seconds early, but that's okay. We'll start. Let me give you a quick rundown of what we're going to do this semester. And I got Carlos up here with me. We divided our two-year program into four main headings, and these come from a lot of discussion with the apostolic team members. So I think you can see that on that first page right there. Leadership, relationship, and ministry, of course, to us really means management skills, and then spirituality. So divided into those categories, some of the things we're going to do is I'm going to do a six-session series on called Leadership is Character throughout the semester. We'll do two of them today and then various different times. We're doing a class called Vision and Values with Pastor Steve and Joey. And what's that about?
So Pastor Steve's going to walk us through the Every Nation mission, the victory values, the corporate culture, and the oversight structure so that we have a greater understanding of what the ministry, international ministry team does, how the apostolic team functions, overseeing all the different departments. So we understand a bigger picture of what we're doing. And coming from Pastor Steve, that's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, now we had a meeting with Alex Castillo. And talk to us about what he's done and who he is and what he's going to do for us.
We have 6 R's with Mr. Alex Castillo, former CEO of Del Monte. Alex Castillo, over a period of, I forget, Gigi, how many years did he mention? But over a period of years, was able to move Del Monte from a 14,000 staffed organization with, let's say, this is their annual yield in terms of production, to a 5,000 person staffed organization with a fourfold yield. He decreased their employee ratio to their performance capacity. And he's going to speak to us about the mind of a manager, how if we all develop the mind of a manager,
yeah.
In his words, it's a no borloloy MBA.
Everything. His exact words.
Yeah,
because I understand his words.
He changed it for you.
Did he? Okay,
he did, which I won't use here. So, but basically, he said he never went through MBA himself, but he was mentored by people who had MBAs when he worked in Procter & Gamble, Pepsi, Del Monte. He's a believer, longtime believer, and it's going to be very exciting. You don't want to miss any of that.
I'm excited about that. We're actually going to do an abbreviated version of that for our senior pastors and leaders so they understand what we're being trained in and how we're going to model and some of the things we'll implement in our administration.
Yeah.
So he's the real deal. He's worth the whole price of admission. Then we have a series called Effective Leadership with John Polanka. Explain him to us.
Yeah, John Polanka is the country manager of Motorola. Actually, he isn't the country manager. From the way it describes, he's more the regional manager because he also goes to Vietnam, he goes to Singapore, he goes to several Asia nations overseeing their operations there. He's been functioning as a manager for about 3 years now. And just to give you an insight of this guy, we had to reschedule our meeting because he got called into Malacanang. He was one of the people basically being considered what position was that? Basically head of telecom, a cabinet position over telecom for the country. He's being invited by President Mr. Pinoy to do that. So very interesting time. We're very excited about him. He's another person who said he really worked the ranks. When he started off in Continental, if I remember right, he started off as a baggage boy. Dealing with the luggage and everything, and
lost luggage.
Worked his way through the ranks. So very, very excited. When we were talking to him, he was saying it's not so much that he had courses as much as he learned how to lead in any setting in the organization. So we're going to draw from what he learned there. You can already see iba rin eh. Well, his perspective is going to be very different, and it's going to help broaden our understanding as well. So,
explain those two because you don't have a name by him.
Yeah, all right. So we also have Pastor Jansen from Alabang coming in, teaching us on basic management functions, planning, organizing, leading, and evaluating. So it'll be good. We're going to have, we're working through Pastor Adam, myself, or Pastor Manny to teach us coaching and how that implements into the mentoring process for supervisors, learning the skills in basic supervision.
Yeah.
Pastor Paul will do inside-out transformation. Paul.
I'm not going to tell you anything about that.
Until we do it.
Yes. And then we have Pastor Jure is going to come teach us on faith. How many think we need a bigger impartation of faith, huh? All right, so that's what we got planned for you this semester.
That's first sem.
First semester, yeah, that's first semester. All right, leadership is character. You have your notes? We're going to talk a little bit, and then we'll have a little discussion time. Now, our goal is to have plenty of feedback, so where are all those microphones that were around? I see one, two, where's the others? Three. I think there was four, wasn't there? Yeah, okay. Great. So if I call on you, you got to get a microphone because these are being recorded for people that aren't here so they can catch up. All right, leadership is character. Are you on the first page there? There's a universal leadership vacuum in our world. And let me say that we have more notes than I'll be able to cover. So if I skip something, you don't know the fill-in, don't worry. It's okay. It won't be on a test. There won't be any quiz. If you can't sleep tonight with knowing that fill-in, you can come up to me afterwards and look on my notes and find it out. But don't go look at, what did he say? It's okay if you don't get the fill-in, all right? No tests for this group here, okay? No quizzes. All right? Will you sleep better now? Universal leadership vacuum in our world. The great English thinker Edmund Burke said, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Because there's a leadership vacuum, and that vacuum will always be filled. So if it's not filled with godly leaders, then the world has their own supply of leaders to fill. And so worldwide, there's a leadership vacuum. And there's a need for Christian men and women to rise up and to fill that vacuum. Now, let's look briefly at the secular versus the Christian view of leadership. Can you put that slide up for me, our first one? Matthew chapter... There we go. Whoa. Can you all read that? Follow with me. Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to Jesus with her sons and kneeling down asked a favor of him. What is it you want? He asked. She said, grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right hand and the other at your left in your kingdom. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said to them. Can you drink the cup I'm going to drink? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or left hand is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared by my Father. When the 10 heard about this, they were indignant with the two brothers. Why were they indignant? Yeah, they were mad that those two boys got there first. Because they had their whole strategy already planned out. Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Just leave that up if you would. So, just prior to this event, if you look back at Matthew chapter 20, Jesus has spoken to the 12 and said, you will sit on 12 thrones judging the tribes of Israel. So, the two brothers, James and John, they get their little strategy together. If we're going to sit on the 12 thrones, we want to make sure we get the best spots. So they work out a deal. They get their mama to go to Jesus. You know, I was raised a Roman Catholic and taught that's why you prayed to Mary. Because when you needed something from your daddy, you always talked to your mama, and then the mama went. And if you hear that growing up? Well, they had the same kind of idea. Let's get mama, and she'll go to Jesus and talk to him. Well, Jesus has a meeting with his staff and says, let's talk about what leadership really is. Okay? There's a contrast, number one on your notes, a contrast between the secular path to leadership and the Christian path to leadership. How many of you know leadership in God's kingdom looks different than it does out in the world? Right? How many of you had real jobs in the secular world before you were in ministry? Let me see here. Yeah, so you know there's a difference, isn't there? That's one of the things you like about what you do here. There is a difference. There needs to be even a greater difference. And that's, of course, why we're meeting here together. Number two on your notes, the secular path to leadership requires ambition. The Christian path to leadership requires death to self. See, it's just the opposite. You remember what it was like. How do you get ahead in the secular world? Well, it's cutthroat, right? Dog eat dog. You got to make sure your resume looks better. You got to make sure the head honcho sees you performing. You got to work all kinds of different strategies. And it's the most ambitious are the ones who get the top positions. It's just the opposite in the kingdom of God. It's the ones who die to self. It's the ones who don't try to put themselves forward. Those are the ones who get the top positions. It's interesting to see that even in the secular world, people are starting to realize that that model of leadership doesn't work. I'm quoting from Robert Greenleaf, who before he died started an organization called the Institute for Servant Leadership. He said, we're beginning to see that traditional autocratic leadership is slowly yielding to a newer model. One that tries to enhance the personal growth of workers and improve the quality and caring through a combination of teamwork and community, personal involvement in decision making, and ethical caring behavior. This emerging approach to leadership is called servant leadership. And he's really excited that he's come up with this new term, this new concept. Isn't this amazing? What happens if we actually care about one another and serve one another? It's a revolutionary concept in the for-profit business world. But of course, it is the model of the kingdom of God. It's how leadership happens. And I was glad to hear in most of our responses of what leadership is, it reflected that. It was serving, it was influencing, it was caring. Those are all biblical concepts of leadership. Number three, the secular path to leadership requires self-promotion. Self-promotion, the Christian path to leadership, requires serving. There's a great example of this in 1 Kings chapter 12. Rehoboam, Solomon's son, has come to the throne. And he calls his counselors together to get some advice. And they say, your father Solomon, his tax burden was heavy on the people. Of course, remember Solomon's main task, main job, main accomplishment was what? He built the temple, right? Now, you know, whenever you build huge structures like that, it takes what? I knew Cricket would tell us. It takes money, lots of the green stuff, lots of do-re-mi, right? And so that means increased taxes. Now, Solomon's dead, beautiful temple. The counselors came and said, the best thing you can do is remove the tax burden and become a servant to your people. And he says, if you serve them, they will serve you forever. Wow, what a great piece of advice. If you serve them, they will serve you forever. But he had some other counselors. His friends, his peers, his age group. And he asked them, what should I do? And in the end, they gave him a little analogy. He said, tell them that my father's thigh is like my thumb. In other words, you think you had a tax burden from him. Wait till you see what I'm going to give you. The very opposite. He said, look out because here I come. And what happens as a result? Well, 10 tribes follow the rebel Jeroboam, and the nation is divided and split. Split for good, actually. Those 10 tribes never came back and became a part once again, eventually dispersed throughout the nations. If you serve them, they will serve you forever. Jesus set the example of serving, didn't he? We see it right here in this passage. John chapter 13. Excellent example. It's important when you read that passage, you know, it's Jesus washing their feet. You got to get the context. The first two or three verses set up the context. Jesus, knowing where he'd come from, knowing where he was going, essentially with full awareness of who he was in the fullness of his deity. That's the context. In the light of that, he stripped himself, donned the lowest position of the lowest of the low, and began to wash the feet of his disciples. And then they asked him, what's going on here? He said, I'm giving you an example. You call me master and Lord, teacher, and so I am. And if I do this for you, how much should you do that for one another? It's really challenging, isn't it? You know, the passage we looked at here, when somebody's vying for wanting to be number one, who's the greatest? There's three different times in the Gospels where the disciples are having an argument among themselves, who's the greatest? Who's the greatest? There's one time, I love this, they're walking along and obviously Jesus is walking ahead and the 12 are walking behind. And the gospel writer tells us they're arguing over who's the greatest. And I can imagine what they're talking about, you know. One guy's saying, remember that leper that we healed yesterday? Did you notice whose hand was closest when he got healed? That was me. Another guy said, No, remember when we laid hands on that blind guy? Remember who Jesus asked to do the prayer? It was me. Having this big argument about who's the greatest. And they get where they're going, and Jesus, by the word of knowledge, says to them, children, what were you discussing on the road? Isn't that great? Not men. He called children. What were you talking about? Three separate times. You know, Luke even tells us at the Last Supper, the most poignant moment in Jesus' life, aware of what's about to happen. Luke tells us that at the table, they're having an argument right there about who's the greatest. Wow. That's really convicting, isn't it? That's the reality among us. But Jesus set the example of what real serving is about. We serve God when we serve others. You got to keep that constantly in mind. Colossians chapter 3, Paul says, whatever you do, work at it with your heart as to the Lord, not from men, since you know that you received the inheritance of the Lord as a reward. It's the Lord Christ you are serving. How many know in our particular roles, we got to remind ourselves of that every single day. Every day, it's Jesus that I'm serving today. General William Booth was the founder of the Salvation Army. And in the Midwest in the United States, they were having a big Salvation Army conference. And Booth was scheduled to come and speak, but he got ill and he couldn't attend. And so they asked him to send a telegram giving them his vision for the next 10 years. kind of the keynote message of what they should be thinking about and looking towards. What's our vision that'll guide and direct us for the next 10 years? And so the telegraph came, and the leader of the conference rose to read this 10-year vision statement from their great leader, and everybody was in anticipation. But it was just one word, a one-word telegram, and the guy read it. It was others. That's our 10-year vision. Others. What a great perspective that is. Serving is done with no thought of reward. Serving is actively looking out for the needs of others. Actively looking out for the needs of others. My wife used to tell me that it's not serving until it hurts. See, if you enjoy doing it, you're not serving yet. It's not serving until it starts to hurt. Like, oh, I had other plans. That hurts. Now you're actually serving. Up till now, you were just doing things that you enjoyed anyway. You're only serving, really. Serving begins when it starts to hurt. Up to that point, it's just fun. Serving is the path to promotion in God's kingdom. There's a pastor in the United States years ago named Samuel Brengel, and he pastored a large congregation, and there were other churches that were anxious to hire him, even much larger. A lot of possibilities, large cities, large congregations. But he was interested in going to England and working with the Salvation Army. And so he turned down big opportunities to work, to lead as a senior pastor of these large congregations, resigned his own post there, a senior pastor of a large church, and he went to England. But William Booth was a little concerned about his motivation. And so he gave him his task. This is your job. Now, the Salvation Army officers, if you're familiar with the Salvation Army, in the early days when they were really a force, a revival force, the leaders actually wore these uniforms and so had these big black boots. Now, of course, London, England, streets are not paved, it rains a lot there. And every day the officer would come back from ministry in the streets and their boots were just caked with mud. So his job was to clean the boots and then to polish them. They call blacking the boots. So they would clean them all up and then he would have to put this like polish back on them to get them back in shape for the next morning. That was his job, to black the boots of the army officers. And so one night, because it's, you know, his job starts in the evening and goes through the night. One night he's sitting there grumbling and complaining. Lord, I gave up a great position of influence in the States. I had people wanting me larger churches. I gave it all up to come here, and all I'm doing is blacking their boots. And he was going on grumbling and complaining. And then it got quiet in the room. You know, that's always a dangerous moment when you've been complaining and gets kind of quiet and you know the Lord's about to speak. And he reminds him of that picture in John chapter 13 of Jesus taking off his own garment and washing the feet of his disciples. And with tears in his eyes, Samuel Brengel said, Lord, you wash their feet, and so I will black their boots. And interesting, he actually became the first American-born leader of the Salvation Army. Went from blacking boots to eventually running the whole organization. Character is the foundation of leadership. We're going to talk about character the rest of our sessions. Leadership is character. The foundation of Christian leadership is character. Leaders may have charisma and ability, but if they do not have character, their influence will not last. Interesting, almost all the qualifications Paul lists for leaders in 1 Timothy 3 are related to character. When you're looking for leaders, Paul said, look for character first. I think there's 20 or 21 characteristics listed in that passage in 1 Timothy, and 20 of them relate to character. Only one has anything to do with ministry. And I know some of you wonder, why am I doing this job? I have no training. They're asking me to do things. It's the complete opposite of my college training, or I don't have any training. Probably it's because of character. That's probably why. As they saw, there's character there. You can get training. As long as the foundation of character is there, you can get what you need. Theodore Roosevelt, one of the great American presidents, said, character is the decisive factor in the life of an individual and of nations alike. Character is defined by the following statements. You guys had a lot of great statements. I'm going to add to them with a few of my own. Character is the sum total of the principles and motives that control a person's life. Oz Guinness, the Christian writer, are you familiar with him? Seen any of his books? Talking about character, he said, character is clearly distinct from such concepts as personality, image, reputation, or celebrity. It is the inner reality and quality in which thoughts, speech, decisions, behavior, and relations are rooted. As such, character determines behavior, just as behavior demonstrates character. Character is the actions of a person under pressure. You never find out character until it gets hot. You see, till the pressure brings you to the breaking point, then you find out what your real character is. See, when everything's going good, you can fake anybody out. But when the pressure comes, then you find out what's really on the inside. Helen Keller said, you know who Helen Keller is? Woman born blind. Actually not born, but shortly after birth, went blind, deaf, and dumb. But was trained by a woman, if you saw the movie Miracle Worker, and then became a great social activist and writer, a very influential woman. She said, character cannot be developed in ease and quiet. Only through experience of trial and suffering can the soul be strengthened and success achieved. You see, that's why you're doing the job you're doing. Say, Lord, why is there so much pressure? Because God's building character. It can't be developed in ease and quiet. Can only be developed in the fire. Character is who you are. Reputation is who people think you are. There's often a difference, you know. One of our great American presidents, Abraham Lincoln, said, character is like a tree, and reputation like its shadow. The shadow is what we think of. The tree is the real thing. Character is the image of God stamped on a person. It's interesting, the English word character comes originally from a Greek word and then through Latin into English. And the word originally meant to cut into or stamp by application or pressure. And it referred initially in ancient Greece to a metal stamp that had the image of the emperor on it. And what they would do in creating coins is they would heat the metal, gold or silver or some precious metal, till it became a liquid state. And then as it started to cool, they would take the stamp and press it upon the cooling metal. And it would transfer the image of the emperor to the coin. You see, I think that's a very appropriate picture of what character is. Character is God heating up our life turning up the heat, and then stamping His image on us so that when we cool, we bear a little bit more of His image. So each time the pressure increases in our life, that's God's stamp. It's God's pressure pushing on us. And the goal is when we're finished, we'll look a little bit more like Him. Which that, and only that, makes difficult times worthwhile. Knowing that as a result, I'll look a little bit more like Jesus when this is finished. And I hope it gets finished soon. Character is the fruit of walking in the Spirit. Let's close with a few thoughts now about how it's developed. Character comes from God's presence. Character comes from God's presence. Great passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 3. Paul says, "But we all with unveiled faces, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being changed from one degree of glory to the next." How do we get changed? By worship. By being in His presence. By seeing Him. Of course, Paul is alluding to Moses in Exodus, going on the mountain. Remember, he spent 40 days in God's presence. 40 days without eating or drinking. That's what we call a supernatural fast. Kids, don't try this at home. Okay, you can't do that unless you're in God's presence. But for 40 days, he was in God's presence, and he absorbed God's glory. To such an extent, when he came down from the mountain, he was reflecting God's glory. And it was so bright that the Israelites couldn't look at his face, because if they did, they'd go blind. And Paul is referring back to that and saying, compared to what we have in the new covenant, Moses didn't have anything. Now we, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being changed from one degree of glory to the next. We're being changed into His image as we behold Him in His Word, as we worship Him, as we're in His presence. Our character is changed. It's changed by God's presence, and it's changed. Character comes from God's pressure. Those two together, pressure and presence. I have a university degree in art. Okay, so if some of you feel like you're not qualified for what you do with your background, I know how to draw pictures. I know we made fun of this, I actually had a class in basket weaving. I really did. Yeah, crafts class, learning to basket weave. Yeah. Really equipped me for my calling in life. One of the classes I was forced to take against my will, but I had to, was ceramics. So, before we're going to, what's called throwing a pot, okay, which I think it's appropriately named because that's exactly what I wanted to do with that pot when I was finished. You know, you've seen them on that spinning wheel, right? Have you seen that? And they got their hands in it. And look, man, it looks so easy, doesn't it? Oh, my goodness. That is tough. Before you even get to that point, you got to select your clay. Okay? So the instructor took us to the bins to get clay. And we were supposed to reach in and just grab two big hunks of clay. And then he took us over to the preparation table. And imagine long, flat tables, kind of like this, but stretched along the length of a long wall, and stations along the way where there's a board on the back of it. You see, so you got an L-shaped, and then you got a taut metal wire from the back of the top to the front of this, so forming sort of a triangle, right? Can you see that? And you would stand in front of that taut wire with the clay in two hands and slice the clay, and then, as hard as you could, slam it on the table. And then pick it all up again, put it together, slice, slam, slice, slam, slice, slam, for about 10 minutes. Now you say, what is the purpose of this seemingly random event? I'm so glad you asked me that question. You see, clay in its raw natural form has a lot of air bubbles in it. If you don't get the air bubbles out, after you've made that pot, you put it in a kiln, you know, it gets very hot in that kiln. And what happens to air when it heats up? It expands, right? And so those little air bubbles will expand. And when you open that kiln, instead of a nice little something for your mom for Mother's Day, you've just got broken pottery shards on the bottom of the kiln. Now, he's the great master potter, isn't he? He's got us on his preparation table. And it looks a little like this. Slice. Slam. Slice. Slam. Because he is forcing out the air bubbles, all of the impurities that if we don't get them out, we get in the fire, we're just going to be shattered pottery. His presence and his pressure forming us into his image. Let's close here. We got a, can you put that next? I'd like you to take few minutes here. Giselle, can you put that next slide up for me? Is that it? Yeah, okay. I want you in your little groups right here, okay? The tables, get together and talk about this. What specific aspects of your job are helping to build character in your life right now? Remember, character is built through pressure. And how can you cooperate more with the Holy Spirit to allow God's work to have the maximum impact in your life? Go ahead. Get in your little groups right there and start talking about that question.